There's Jay.
He's like, all right, enough with the chit-chat. Hello, everyone. I'm Kimberly Adams. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make today make sense.
That was very Charlton Thorpe-esque of him. Maybe Jake. I don't know. Anyway, I'm Kyle Rizal. Thanks for joining us on this Wednesday. It is January the 10th today.
Yes, and we are going to do some news and then do some smiles-ish. Let's get into it. Kai, why don't you go first?
So I will start, and let me preface this by saying that by the time you hear this in the next, I don't know with what frequency people listen, 18, 24 hours delayed, whatever, this may have already become news, but I want to bring it up because, number one, we haven't really talked about it. Number two, it could be a big deal. And number three, oh, by the way, cybersecurity. So yesterday, the Twitter account of the Securities and Exchange Commission was hacked, which, number one, is bad enough because that obviously is the key regulator for financial markets in this economy, one of the key regulators. But number two, it was hacked to put out a tweet that said that the SEC had approved what are called, or what is going to be called, a Bitcoin exchange traded fund. That is to say, a fund, sort of like a mutual fund, right, that is traded like a stock on an exchange in which you can trade on Bitcoin, right? It was erroneously sent out yesterday. The SEC is expected to vote, probably to approve a Bitcoin ETF soon-ish, maybe today, maybe this week. But yesterday, it did not happen for real. And yet, Bitcoin spiked, many billions of dollars changed hands. Not really great. So that's problem number one. Problem number two is, and I've said this on the radio and I've said this on this podcast, I'm a crypto skeptic. It is not real money. It will not be real money for quite a while. And it is right now a deeply, deeply speculative instrument. So what the SEC is probably going to do in approving an exchange traded Bitcoin fund is let regular investors, maybe with not a whole lot of money, but maybe some of them do, get in on Bitcoin, which, okay, but be ready to lose your money because Bitcoin is still a deeply, deeply speculative instrument. So that's in the wind. It's going to happen probably. And just caveat emptor. That's all I want to say.
Yeah, just be careful out there, y'all. You know, we've done a couple shows on Bitcoin-related things. And, you know, like we said before, you know, not to like boost our own egos, but if reasonably intelligent people pay attention to the economy all the time can't really make sense of it, it's like, make sure that you really, 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 really understand what you're doing before you get involved. That's all I'm asking. That's all I'm asking.
Same. What about you?
Okay, my news is about the oh-so-exciting world of state budgets. So,
way to sell it.
Early in the pandemic, I was very, very concerned about state budget revenues because with so many people staying home, so many more people, obviously not all people, not even the majority of people, to be honest. But anyway, with lots more people staying home, a lot less spending, state tax revenues took a huge hit from sort of day to day going about their business. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know, the states handle so many social services that people are really going to need. What's going to happen? Well, because there was a Supreme Court ruling a couple years before I think it was like a year before the pandemic, saying that states had the right to collect sales tax on online transactions from like Amazon sales and such like that, that really saved them. So all that online shopping that we did during the pandemic and since then really helped cover a lot of that gap. In addition, with the various pandemic relief bills, state budgets got a lot of extra money for healthcare, for infrastructure, for unemployment insurance, for additional food programs for children and families. So states had all of this extra money in their budgets to do with as they wanted to, with some parameters. Anyway, all of that is going away. So there are a couple of really interesting stories out right now. One from It's research out that came out from Pew yesterday that says for the first time since 2020, state governments must confront broadly shared budget challenges. Some of the most populous states, including California, New York and Pennsylvania, face among the most serious problems. Based on budget analysis, states published in late 2023, roughly half of Americans live in states that report short-term budget gaps, potential long-term deficits, or both. And this inventory almost certainly understates the scope of the problem because many states do not publish sufficient forward-looking data to meaningfully assess their fiscal outlook. Going over to Politico, it says, you know, the pandemic boom times are over for state lawmakers, and so is their ability to shower big buckets of cash onto top priorities like K-12 education while also slashing taxes and stocking away reserves. State budgets swelled by roughly 30% over a three-year span as the country grappled with the pandemic. Now states from Massachusetts to Indiana to California are facing falling revenues or lower than projected tax receipts for the first time since the economy screeched to a halt in 2020. Surpluses are vanishing. Why does this matter so much? Because unlike federal government deficits, it's a lot harder for states to just like get cash to, you know, issue bonds. Like you can get state and municipal bonds, sure, but they are not as attractive to investors. They're not as easy. They're not as liquid, I don't think, in the same way. And correct me if I'm wrong here, Kai, but it's a lot harder for states to raise revenue quickly compared to, say, the federal government. Mm-hmm. And so when you see state budget shortfalls, especially in those states that have like requirements for a balanced budget, you pretty quickly start to see an immediate transition to reduction of services. Yep. And so this is something definitely worth watching. So.
No, you're absolutely right on the whole raising revenue thing, number one. And number two, just as a living example, as it were, Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, is, as we speak, delivering his speech on what he's going to do about the $68 billion budget hole that we have here in the fifth largest economy in the world. So it's a real thing. For bleeping sure. You betcha.
Yeah, there's a quote here in the headline of the Politico article. It was a mirage.
Yeah, totally.
yeah.
Totally.
All right, let's get to some smiles-ish.
All right, what do you got? Oh, Last of Us. Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
I'll tell you why it's funny in a minute. Go ahead.
You and I are alike in that we do not like scary movies or scary shows.
Mm-hmm.
I, in particular, do not like anything zombie-related.
Amen, baby.
Generally, zombie-related things, they don't just give me nightmares, they give me night terrors. like, wake up, cold sweat, things are chasing me, frightening. And I mean, it just, like, gets into my subconscious in a really disturbing way. So I have been reading, you know, for the last couple of years, how great The Last of Us is and, you know, how wonderful it is and all these things. And one of my friends, he was telling me, look, the scariest thing about The Last of Us is actually how the people behave.
Oh, that's so funny.
More so than how the zombies behave. And it's not that bad. So as I was taking down my Christmas decorations last night, and I was all caught up on the anime that I'm watching right now. And I was like, okay, I'm going to give it a go.
Oh my God. Did you really?
I did. I faced my fear. I faced my fear. And I watched all of the first season of The Last of Us.
Oh,
finished
my
it
God.
About 4 a.m.
Did you really?
I did. I watched the whole thing from beginning to end. And I really liked it, and I wasn't that scared. Like there were some moments where I had to take a little walk, but for the most part, I liked it, and it was great.
That's
and then
so
I was
funny.
On Kotaku today, and I saw that they're already casting for season two, which I didn't even know there was going to be a season two. But I think I will actually watch it. So I'm smiling because I faced a fear, and I did not have night terrors in the 3 hours that I slept last night.
Wow, I'm gobsmacked. I'm amazed. So a very brief diversion, if I may, and I promise
yes.
to only drop one name, and it will be just tangential. So
okay.
I am a known fraidy cat, right? I haven't seen a scary movie since I was 12 years old. God's honest truth, right? Okay. I don't do zombies. I don't do scary. I don't I don't do anything. I think related on this podcast, the scariest movie I ever saw was Chitty Chitty Bang Bang and the Child Catcher guy. And oh my God, right?
That was creepy. That was actually
right.
Creepy.
Exactly. So anyway, so my wife. So the guy who created, along with the game maker, the guy who created the show, The Last of Us, Craig Mazin, is a family friend. And so he's the guy who did Chernobyl and just super talented, great writer, amazing EP, right? If you haven't seen Chernobyl, you definitely should.
Good job.
Yeah, I will. but so we find out Craig's doing The Last of Us and I'm like, oh yeah, no. And my wife's like, of course, it's Craig. We have to watch it and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, sweetie, I am not watching that show. So we were out with Craig a while ago before he left for Canada to film this thing. And I'm like, dude, I love you, but I am not watching your show. And he blessed me and he said, you don't have to. I understand.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. So he's a good guy. He's a good guy.
But as a fellow scaredy cat,
no,
I think
absolutely not.
You'll be okay.
Absolutely
no?
not.
Right.
Absolutely not.
There it is. Leave it alone. I'm going to leave it alone.
I will not
there
face
are
my
There so
fears.
Many other things to watch. You yes. live your life in happiness and peace.
I will do that. All right. We're going to bail on my smile because it's not really a smile. It's a more of a shake your head in a rueful manner. And we can save that for another day when it's actual news because it will surely be news. But let us go with me being a fraidy cat and you being braver than me. Take us out of here.
Attempting every so often. All right, that is it for us today. We are going to be back tomorrow. Until then, you know how to get a hold of us. You can send your thoughts, questions, or what you're afraid of and maybe what fears you may want to face in the new year. Comments to makemesmart@marketplace.org, or you can leave us a voicemail at 508-UB-SMART.
Make Me Smart is produced by Courtney Bergseeker. Ellen Rolfes writes our newsletter. Today's program, as you might have been able to tell, was engineered by Jay Siebold.
Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez composed our theme music. Our senior producer is Marissa Cabrera. Bridget Bodner is the director of podcasts. And Francesca Levy is the executive director of digital.
I like it. It's kind of like Jay's like fingerprints on the show when he drives, you know?
It's like good. Music comes in quietly, sneaks up on you.
You know,
I need a button that says stop complaining. Stop. That's what I need.
Oh, man.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.